Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I want to say thank you to you guys for all your support. Wow, we're past 770,000 downloads of the podcast. Wow, could not have done that without your support. I really hope you've enjoyed the shows. For me, it's just been a blessing. I've got to speak with people, places from all over. I mean, it's just been amazing, from Dubai, South Africa, the Netherlands, Brazil, and here all across the United States, and about so many different topics. I've just been so blessed. Right now, I'll be speaking with a good friend of mine that I grew up with a long time ago. I won't say how old we are, but anyways. And he's just wrote a wonderful poetic memoir called Junkie Witness. His name is Alexis Johnson. I believe he's on the line right now.
Yes.
Good morning,
yes.
Alexis. Hey.
Good morning.
Good
how
morning.
Are
how are you?
Good, good, good. Excited.
Excited, yeah, like, wow, blow me away, like, knock me over the bus. Why don't you, could you have put a warning label on the front?
right.
Right?
That's the little me on the cover.
Yeah, with your mom.
Yes, yes.
A long time ago. Let me just give people a little background. Like, I've known Alexis, we met in, like, fifth grade. Alexis Johnson and I, and we were cool. But then I think we got more cool. We used to be dancing buddies. And, I mean, we used to party. Like, we would get on the floor and dance for, like, 3 hours or something crazy, right? It was crazy.
Right, yeah.
That was a long time. That was a whole other life. But now this book, what triggered you to say, this is the time I need to share the story?
Well, I had spent many, many years struggling with issues that, you know, affected my life growing up. In my early 20s, I went through, I would say, some dark times where I knew that I needed to really kind of look inside and see what was really going on with me. And I came out of that darkness, or was attempting to come out of the darkness, when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And that's when I started writing as kind of a therapeutic tool.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of deal with what I experience, how it may be affecting me in my everyday life as an adult. And initially, it was just for me. You know, every day I would probably write a poem and write. I tried to write every day, and that started in my early 30s. And I got to a point where I felt, I guess in a sense, relief.
From writing, you know. It was a catharsis?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. What's your earliest memory of your mom? What's the earliest memory of your mom? Do you have one that you can share?
I would say probably when I was around 5. Well, there was an earlier memory before that. I remember seeing earthquake, and I was probably 2 years old. But that was, like, lasted a second, that visual memory. But when I was 5, I can remember my mom. She was addicted to heroin, and I remember her kind of dragging me around New York City. I can remember being at parties, hippies and all kinds of things going on.
When did you realize that she was addicted? Did you know as a kid this is an addiction? Did you name it that? Or did you just know something was off? Like, when did that click in your head? What was happening?
Well, I didn't initially know that it was even an issue because my environment, that was, my whole environment was that, drugs and,
mm-hmm.
and what was going on with my mom. Most of the people were just like her who I was around. And so I didn't even know that that was something different than anyone else was going through at my age or any other
right.
family that would be going through that. I think I realized probably when I was about six or seven, and I would go to the clinic with my mom, and she would get methadone. And then I realized that there was a, you know, kind of like this segment of society that were like this, that were doing these things.
Right.
And at that point,
right.
I started to see it as an illness, like a sickness.
Mm. And how old were you? How old were you when you have that memory of her going to the meth clinic?
Definitely like six years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would travel. Sometimes we lived in Manhattan, East Village. And sometimes we would live in Staten Island. My mother had a lot of friends in Staten Island, so we were either, you know, traveling to drug programs that were either in Staten Island or in Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Well, you have your book broken up into different areas and different time periods. You talk about Lower East Side, you talk about Staten Island, you talk about your mom. What do you have happy memories with your mom? Because there are some happy times. And from reading the poems, a lot of smells, like the cooking, the smell of rugs, it seems like there's this sense of memory throughout a lot of the poems of different smells that you just came upon, so to speak, you know?
Yeah.
And
smells
food
were very
and
important.
Yeah.
My mom, I guess as a survival thing, I don't know, but my mom showed me how to cook at a very young age. You know, basic stuff. Cook eggs,
right.
How to make yourself a sandwich, how to boil an egg, you know, how to use the stove at 5, 6 years old. But I remember, as far as pleasant memories, I remember simple things like waking up on a Saturday or Sunday morning and having my mom surprise me with, like, I used to put together these models, these snap models of,
mm-hmm.
you know, cars and ships. And once in a while, my mom would surprise me with one of those models, and she'd have paint ready, and I'd spend all day, and that would be the day that she would be clean or appear to be clean and present. So those days were important for me, and they happened periodically from my memory, from anywhere from 5 to when she passed away.
Yeah, you do talk about her trying to actually kick in one of the pieces, trying to you know, her withdrawal symptoms. And I just want to mention to people, again, I'm talking to Alexis Johnson about his poetic memoir, Junkie Witness. You can call in 646-929-0368. We're talking about this issue. You know, he's a child of a parent who's an addict. I myself am a child of an addict. My dad is a crack addict. And it didn't happen until I was older. If you want to say thankfully, I don't know, but it happened, you know. And it's scary, you know, the person that you're supposed to trust and care for you, and then they are on these drugs, and they're like this whole other person, and then they have these times where they're cool. You know, they're back to normal, but they're not. You know, it's hard. Let's talk about the effects of this on your life. You mentioned about having a difficult time through your 20s, and it's a known fact that children of, you know, addicts are at risk for alcohol, drug abuse, at risk for, you know, chaotic relationships, also being displaced from their homes. That's something you had to deal with. Do you mind talking about that, how you got adopted? Do you mind talking about that transition?
You know, my mom passed away. I was 8 years old, and, you know, this was the days before cell phones and internet, and so my mom would have me, she had me with her, and so when she passed away, no one knew where I was. So right before she passed away, she was trying to get clean, and she was concerned with me going to school. We were in New Jersey, camping in the woods, and she was trying to get clean, and it was getting cold, and we had nowhere to go. And my mother thought that if she put me in temporary care within the state of New Jersey, that they would put me in school, and then once she was on her feet, that they would give me back to her. Within that time frame, which was about a year that I was in foster care, my mom passed away. And she was clean for about 5 months, and she went to visit a friend, and she overdosed on methadone, which at the time no one knew you could overdose on methadone.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and pretty much where that left me was in foster care, and then my mother had some friends in New York and some friends in Philadelphia. And it took a while for those people to figure out where I was. And eventually my godfather was contacted, and my mother's friend in Philadelphia was contacted. And they then went through legal custodial issues.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, I came to Philadelphia. That's when we met.
That's when we met. Do you feel comfortable reading something from the book?
Give me a moment here. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah, Alexis and I met at an arts elementary school, and we were just that was one of the best memories that school. I mean, I had some crazy memories there. But in terms of arts, it really saved my life. I know it impacted Alexis's life. We had dance, we had music, we had actual arts and crafts. We had singing. This was a public school. You would have thought it was private, but it was a public school with all these different arts. They don't even have something like that, I think, now, that unless it's private or charter. I don't even know. How do you think
great.
The arts?
It was great.
What are some of your memories from going there? Oh, and Alexis was cute. He was like one of the cutest boys in the school too, and like all the girls loved him.
now, making me blush.
Oh boy, high yellow blushing. Watch out.
Yes. School, elementary school was fun. Okay, I found a poem.
You found something to read? Okay, cool. Go ahead.
Yes. This poem's called Junk.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start. This a day in the dark, early morning, and I can hear a horrifying sound, continuous regurgitations. I'm always waking up afraid, full of anxiety. I'm just 6. Mom is trying to kick it. Addiction does not leave in a day. Screaming, moaning, shaking, crying on the floor of the bathroom. soaked in sweat. It is summer, and she is under three blankets in a wet bed, asking to die. I hide, crying for it to be over. No one is here to help. Who will save my mom? I try the best I can. I'm just six. Today the needle doesn't hang from her arm, but the poison still fills her veins. This is not the last battle.
Yeah. It's definitely not the last battle. It's a really, I wasn't like with my stepdad in the junkie house or anything, but seeing him over the years is constantly back and forth and trying. I think now he's at a good spot, but it's just crazy. It's a crazy life. It's crazy what it does to the person.
Yeah.
And for me, always being like, you're scared. You're terrified of this person, you know, and like it's just the instability, you know, of the life of when the person is on drugs, the person that's supposed to care for you, you know, all those resources are gone. You don't, you know, like for your case was even worse than mine, not like living out in the woods. You know what I mean?
Right.
How do you think transitioned into adulthood? You know, how do your relationships when you were adult? Do you look back now and say, oh, that's why I chose that person, or that's why I was in that place?
Right.
Are you able to see that connection?
Yeah, I feel like immediately the first thing that becomes the issue with being in a situation like mine is issues with abandonment, feeling abandoned. Abandonment started probably before I could even remember, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I was in a situation as a child where my mom would leave me places. That's abandonment. Where is she? She coming back? Being disconnected. That's abandonment. You know, because she would be high. She might be sitting right next to me, but she's not really there. That's abandonment.
Right. You couldn't talk to her. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then ultimately dying, that's abandonment. And fear just goes along with that abandonment. You know, anxiety and fear is a part of the package of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
So at a very, before my teens, before my 20s, I struggled with abandonment and anxiety. And I feel like me working through these things when I was in my early 30s and late 20s and writing this book brings up a very important issue or lesson, you know, that this book could help other people in the same situation.
What else did you do other than the writing? Did you go to counseling at all? Were you talking to friends? Did you go to, like, group meetings? What are some other things you did to help you go to the next level in, like, this catharsis?
Well, I was in and out of therapy from probably age 11
mm-hmm.
to 35. I was in and out of therapy. Writing, of course, and music. I love music. I'm a DJ. I mention in the book how many times music saved me. It was my security that made me feel comfortable and safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of good friends at different points in my life. Part of growing up and feeling abandoned, one of my survival mechanisms was being social so that I didn't have to feel alone.
Mm.
And that led me to become the adult that made a lot of friends because the fear related to abandonment led me to to mostly fear being alone.
But did any of these people know you? I mean, do you feel like you were intimate with any people, or was this like surface, you know?
I would say, you know, literally maybe 10 to 15 people in my life really knew me or know me. And it's not their fault if they don't know me that well, because a part of the kind of backlash of growing up with these struggles is being guarded and having a wall.
Right.
So I keep people at arm's length unconsciously most of the time, which is a struggle.
So now you're a father now. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So what are you imparting to your child, and how has that relationship helped heal you to some degree, having a child? I'll just let everybody know how close Alexis and I are. Alexis had my baby shower for me in his house when I was pregnant. I still have pictures. They made this stupid balloon hat, and, you know, it was only a couple people, but that's how close he was, that he had the baby shower in his house. And so, you know, thank you for that. But how did your relationship with your daughter, because your daughter was a year before mine.
Right.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I feel that, like I think a lot of people feel when they're struggling, once you have a child, for me specifically, I felt as soon as my daughter was born, I had more of a reason to work hard on myself and become a better person, and not be reckless, and to be conscious of choices I made and make every day. Right now, my daughter's 19 years old. She's in college, and we see each other every day. And a lot of my struggles are similar to the struggles she's gone through. She lost her mother in 2006 to cancer, and she's very independent, and we have a bond. And I think we have a bond mostly because I had to work really hard to connect because of one of the outcomes of my life at a very young age. One of the outcomes as an adult is that it's very hard for me to connect to people. And I can remember when my daughter was younger, you know, from 5 to, you know, 12, I had to be conscious of telling her I love her and holding her and giving her hugs and supporting her emotionally.
Right.
Because I didn't have that. That was not an example I had. So I needed to learn that. Literally, I needed to learn that, and I needed to do it then so that she didn't struggle with the same things that I struggled with.
I think the key there is that you were able to learn. And I think that, I mean, you and I both know people that have issues with, parents who have drug addiction, and they don't go get help, and they keep repeating these cycles over and over and over, you know. It's painful because you know that they could go, or you feel that they could go to that next level, that they could learn the skills and that there's support there. You know, you did have support, and you thank many people in the beginning of the book. And also in your poems, you talk about a couple of angels that appeared in your life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Do you feel that without those angels that you wouldn't be able to learn, or do you think you just somehow got over a hump at a certain point?
I feel that, yeah, they were definitely a part of my learning, part of my surviving. And I acknowledge, you know, people in my book who were landmark relevant in my growing and surviving. If I could, maybe I'll read the acknowledgments. Can I read the acknowledgments?
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Okay. All right. The contents of this book were written to help me, as an adult, face my childhood, a childhood filled with abuse and suffering. I spent over 20 years ignoring the effects of my past on my present. There were multiple breakdowns and multiple dysfunctions. Initially, these entries were used as therapeutic tools to help me deal with post-traumatic stress, but they have turned into a book. I always felt alone in life, like I never fit in, and it is my hope that this book will help anyone out there with a similar story. Throughout my life, I have had people show me that I was not alone or thrown away, and I'd like to publicly thank them because they saved my life. I'd like to thank Sheila Meyer, Benita Cohen, Laura Lajuska, Nancy Ballantyne, Grandmom Gardner, Nora Sloan, Eleanor Mack, and they were mothers for me, and I want to thank them for loving me and being mothers to me along the way. Thank you to the Godfather, and he's mentioned a lot in the book. He partially raised me in New York. The question is he my father or is he just this great guy who was a father figure for me? I'd like to thank Patricia Lyons for showing me that if I stopped running and face my demons, I could begin to end years of suffering. Her kindness saved me from going insane, and I will never forget her. To Sherwood Gardner, thank you for being a father figure throughout my life. Sherwood Gardner, known as Woody, was pretty much my father figure in Philadelphia when I moved to Philadelphia. A big thank you to Amber Roniker, for her motivation and editorial support. And of course to my Philly family, thank you all for being there through thick and thin, rainy days, and some very hard times. Music, of course. But those are just a few people mentioned that were very supportive.
In your life, yeah.
In a parental way, mostly.
Right. Well, we need that. Like, you don't know, if you don't know, you don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you've grown up with this life and your mom, so when you had your daughter, like you said, you had to learn. You didn't even know, like, the capability. But, you know, one of your poems, you do mention you made some connection with another child, I think, who was in a house where your mom was getting high or something. And you're like, oh, okay, there's another person like me going through this craziness. Okay, I'm not alone in this, you know.
Right.
And I think that's important, is to somehow see that you're not alone, you know. Well, we're running out of time, but I really, really thank you so much for sharing. I mean, this is really tough material. It's a really heavy issue, but I'm glad that it was helpful for you to go to the next level in your life. You know what I mean?
Yes. Thank you very much, Joy.
Anytime, honey, you know.
Talk.
Well, I want to let people know that once they can get the book on Amazon, right?
Yes, on Amazon.
Where else can they purchase the book, and when is it going to be available?
In August. It will be available on Amazon in August.
Okay.
E-book. I will also have some printed books for signings, which will also be in August and September in Philadelphia and in New York.
All right, well, I'm going to be giving away some copies, so you guys have to follow me at Joy Keys and become a fan on Facebook to win a copy of Alexis Johnson's book, Junkie Witness, a poetic memoir, ages 5 through 9. So thank you again, Alexis, for coming on today. I really appreciate you, like, basically opening your soul to the world who will hear this interview, you know.
Thank you.
But I'll
Thank
talk
you.
To you. I'll talk to you offline, so to speak.
Thanks. All right,
all right
Joy.
Peace.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, that was Alexis Johnson. We're talking about his book, Junkie Witness, a poetic memoir. I'll be giving away some copies of the book, so you need to follow at Joy Keys, become a fan on Facebook. Also, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Over there, over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.